Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. Pleasure to welcome Rabbi Dr. Seth Brower to first debut on E-Team, ProMotion Zoom channel. It's a pleasure to have him. Rabbi Brower is the Rosh Yeshiva and Head of School of Yeshivot Bnei Akiva. The Bnei Akiva schools, the Yeshiva Or Haim and the Opinat Orot. Here in Toronto since 2013. He's done a marvelous job increasing the people coming, made a name in the city, and has Rabbi Brower really had a big impact in the city of Toronto. He is the honorary chairman of Mizrahi of Canada. He's before he came to Toronto, he served as the assistant principal at Central in New York. And I think before that, for 9 years, taught at Ramaz. He served for 5 years as the associate rabbi of Fifth Avenue Synagogue in Manhattan. I believe he is the founder of the golf team at Yeshiva University. Is that correct? And he is has a law degree, but like I think many people had a career change many, many years ago. So it's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Brower to give the Parsha Shir. Bakasha.
Thank you, Rabbi Kelman. A true honor. I'm a big fan of Torah Motion, very much an avid follower and reader of Rabbi Kelman's Divrei Torah, and I have the benefit of davening with Rabbi Kelman all the time, at least in a pre-COVID world, at the Or Chaim Minyan, where once upon a time I had the privilege of actually listening to Rabbi Kelman give shiurim at the Or Chaim Minyan as well. We're looking forward to that starting up again. Please God, Mirtzah Hashem, as soon as possible. Rabbi Kelman really predates me by many years in Toronto and has taught me, shown me the ropes a little bit in the context of Or Chaim. Rabbi Kelman talks about how once upon a time in the glory days of Or Chaim, they started early, they ended late. All the classes were Yivrit. We're trying to get there. We'll see. We'll see if we can achieve that maybe one day at a time. But for right now, I'm incredibly, really it's a privilege to be joining you on Torah Motion and learning a little bit together. Now, part of what I'd like to do this evening is actually to introduce you to a sefer that many of you may have heard of, but it's a personal favorite of mine, of which I've gotten heavily involved in the last few years, and that is the sefer Tzurba Merabanan. Now, many of you may know Rabbi Ben-Sion El-Ghazi, who is the author of the Hebrew edition, really the real Tzurba Merabanan sefer in Israel. This sefer or set of sparim really was a landmark, watershed moment for chavrutot and individuals in Israel who wanted to learn halacha and study serious halacha, but didn't necessarily have all the mekorot or all the sparim in front of them. So they had the ability instead, Rav El-Ghazi created this incredible work in which he took a sugya, took all the mekorot and put it on a pamphlet. And initially it was just a small little pamphlet, very flimsy, flexible, and people started learning it. And slowly it started to gain traction, and before you knew it, there were actually thousands of people in Israel learning these pamphlets of halakha called Tzurba Merabanan that Rav El-Ghazi was producing. It was absolutely an incredible thing. And over time, they were going through the halakim of Shulchan Aruch, and they were going through all the different sugyot. It was just an incredible initiative. Now, lo and behold, a number of individuals recognize what's going on and say, you know, we have a treasure in our midst and we have to translate it. And now that we have to translate it.
I'm sorry, you know, your sound is a little bit, you know, distant. Before when we were talking, it was
better.
Yeah, that right now is a little better. Yes.
Yes. So strange. I didn't touch anything or do anything.
Now that's better. Yes.
It's better. All right. If something changes, let me know. Okay. Please stop me, Rabbi. And then I'll change it and switch it on to something else. But basically, lo and behold, the American community, and in particular, Rav Doron Polachuk, who was the leader of the a incredible program led or, you know, really coming from Eretz Chemda, called Manhigut Torani, a group of individuals sitting and learning in Kol in Eretz Chemda, decided that they're going to get together and they're going to translate Tzurba Merabanan into English. And in an effort to try to spread it into the Anglo community, South Africa, Australia, World Mizrahi decided to partner on publishing it. And the sefer that you have in front of you is exactly one of those. And I want to just, you know, flip through and show you some of what's contained within it. So you have a sense of it. This is the first volume right here. You have some dedications in the front. And the first volume starts with Here you have the table of contents, and it starts with the laws, Hilchot Avodah Zarah, starts with fascinating topics, halachic status of Islam, Christianity, etc. You can see through the table of contents, sort of what's involved in it, Chukot Hagoyim, sorcery, magic, superstition, peyot, again, all these incredible topics. And then, all of a sudden, page 235, you come to the topic of Shiluach HaKan. So what I'd like to do this evening, in the next hour, is to spend part of the time learning with you some of the sources from the Tzurba Mirabbanan English edition of Shiluach HaKan, specifically learning it together and giving you a sense of how they structure the Sefer and how they analyze this mitzvah, Parsha Ki Teitze, coming right out of this week's Parsha. And as we move through it and as we proceed, I'll add to other things, other makarot, and hopefully we'll conclude with a few messages. To give you a sense of what the book looks like, by the way, this is an actual book. You see it's a relatively speaking small pamphlet, but absolutely incredible in terms of what's inside. So we're going to jump to the beginning of Shiluach HaKan. I sent this actual PDF to Rabbi Kelman. So Rabbi Kelman, if you'd like, you're welcome to share it with the group so everybody has the actual PDF in front of them. Let's get started. Okay, if anyone has any trouble seeing anything, Rabbi Kelman, jump right in and let me know. Okay? Okay, so let me just get this set. One second. Okay. So we're going to read some of it together. Some of them are read outside. Some of them we're not going to be able to learn together just because of timing. If we really went through all these makarot, it would be a 2-hour shiur, not a 1-hour shiur. But I'm going to go through the highlights. And as we go through it, we'll hit at just an incredible number of issues. So first we start with the psukim in Parsha Ki Teitze. And you see I'll just point out one other thing, which is fascinating about the Sefer. They color code all of the different time periods based on the Sefer and where it came from. You know, unlike many of my Talmidim, not to criticize the students at Opana or Or Chaim, who think that the Rambam and Rabbi Akiva were sitting together having a machloket and having an argument, and often Rashi and Rabbi Soloveitchik are arguing together as well, and Jewish history is sort of amalgamated into this idea in which everyone is together all at the same time, and it's hard to separate. I'm a big fan of trying to also teach historical facts in terms of where people lived and when people learned. In the context of that, you see that here in terms of these Sfarim. Now, with everyone's permission, Rabbi Kelman told me I should not take questions at the beginning or at the middle, and I should wait till the end. So for the moment, I'm going to try to wait till the end. Is the sound not working, Rabbi Kelman?
It's not great. I can hear you. I don't know. Somehow, maybe talk a little closer to the microphone. I don't know what to say exactly.
One second. Let me try something else. Just give me one more second.
Okay. Like I said, when we were talking originally, it was fine. And then... Yeah, well, we're hoping to fix that.
Just give me one second. Is that better?
I think so. I have to talk a little bit longer for us to make sure.
Okay, let's see. Okay, let's try that and see if that's better. Okay?
Okay.
I just tried switching from one mic to another. Let's try and see if that works. Okay, we'll see if that works. If it doesn't, then please let me know. It's not better. Okay, one more second. Let me try one more thing.
Maybe if you're sit a little bit closer to the mic.
Okay, let's try that. A little bit closer, one second. Just one more second to try one more thing.
Okay. People are very patient. I give them a big yeshu koach. It's like the story of the Chafetz Chaim. You know, when the Chafetz Chaim turned 90, so they say, his hearing wasn't so great, so they wanted to give him a hearing aid. So the Chafetz Chaim didn't want a hearing aid. You know that story. He said, "No, if people want me to hear, they're going to have to yell. And no one's going to yell Lashon Hara into my ear. So maybe if this sounds not great, people have to pay attention a little bit more. What can we say? We'll do our best." And I apologize for any...
Okay. Is that better?
I can hear you. I can make out the words. So keep going. I think it's a little better.
Okay. Let's try that and see where that goes and see if that's better. Okay. All right. My apologies. Next time I got to use a better microphone. All right. So let's jump right in. So the Torah tells us, Ki yikarek hatzipor lefanecha b'derech b'chol eit ol ha'aretz ha'frochim ol ha'beitzim v'ayim ha'vetzal ha'frochim ol ha'beitzim lo tikach ha'im al ha'banim shalei ha'tisolach ha'ta'im v'etz ha'banim tikach lach man yitavach v'rach del yom. So you have here contained within this mitzvah, a mitzvah asei and a mitzvah lo tasei. You have a mitzvah asei of lo tikach ha'im al ha'banim, and you have the asei of shalei ha'tisolach. And Rashi tells us, Ki yikarek, problem is human. And this is an incredibly important aspect, which is that it has to be something that happens upon you, happenstance. It's prat. It excludes that which is mizuman, that which is specifically reserved or set aside or becomes readily available to an individual. Now, this is an interesting concept in terms of mitzvahs in general and how we look at mitzvahs and how we think about and how we conceive of mitzvahs in the context of how they're done. How often do we think of the reality that anytime something happens, it wasn't necessarily meant to be, should have been, even when I confront or I connect or I happen to be in the right place at the right time, I'm able to perform a mitzvah? Interesting question in general associated with it, but when it comes to this mitzvah, you cannot set it up. It has to be something that just happens upon you. And of course, Rashi continues, the bottom Rashi, Laman Yitavlach, Im Mitzvah kala she'im b'chisrom kis amra Torah l'man yitav lach v'arachta yamim kavachomer l'matan scharan shel mitzvah chamuros. All the more so is this the case for mitzvahs that are actually considered to be chamur, that are actually considered to be challenging or difficult. So now, let's jump into section two, the basis for the mitzvah. So this is perhaps the most famous spoken about context and concept in connection with the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKam. You see at the beginning, he offers this introduction, the Chatam Sofer cites the opinion of the Ramban, right, that we're supposed to not be cruel. So let's jump into the Chatam Sofer. We're going to read the first part, and then we're going to skip a little bit. But he focuses on this idea of achzariot. Ayin Ramban b'nimuki chumash shalom, kata b'tam ha-mitzvah ahi, shalom nit achzar la'akor eim al ha-barnim. You shouldn't be cruel. You shouldn't take away a mother in connection, in front of, literally as she's upon her children. Now, this is a fascinating Mishnah that he's quoting over here. It's specifically a Mishnah in the Gemara and Brachos, where the Gemara and Brachos, the Mishnah tells us, Omer Alkan Sipu Yagir Rachamecha, the Altov Yizachar Shmecha, Modim Modim Mishatkin Otol. The Mishnah tells us that there are three things that if a person says, we silence him and we tell him, stop, quiet down, don't say that. And one of them is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in effect, created this mitzvah for the purpose of mercy. The other two are, person says, modim, modim, he praises God, thanks God twice, or al tov yizacher shemecha, this idea that we're going to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for goodness. And the Gemara even goes into what the issues are associated with it and why there's a problem. The Gemara says, bishlama, modim, modim. This idea of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu twice. It makes it seem like there are two gods, two pieces of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, if you will, right? Statement number one. Makes it sound like you're only praising Kodesh Baruch Hu for goodness and not for negativity. And we're taught that a person has to praise a Kodesh Baruch Hu, thank a Kodesh Baruch Hu, speak about the incredible deeds that a Kodesh Baruch Hu does, both for goodness and, unfortunately, for challenges as well. Ella, al kamsi b'girach mecha my time. The Gemara calls pligi b'atriyam oray b'marava. Rav Yosi bar Avin, Rav Yosi bar Zvida, Chana b'nei shemati okina b'mayis habreishit, v'chana amar b'nei she'osu midotah shal Kodesh Baruch Hu rachamim, v'eino el gzerot. Right? One opinion and one idea is that you're in effect, say, creating kinah, if you will, jealousy among the animals in creation. And the other is speaking specifically about the idea of tamei ha-mitzvot and the fact that we're supposed to look at mitzvot as gzeirot, as decrees, as those actions that don't necessarily have specific reasons associated with them. And we have to be very careful not to act as if there's a reason we're trying to create mercy on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's an interesting statement that the Chatam Sofer makes in the context of describing it. But despite that, and despite that Mishnah, and we'll talk about it more later on, we do assume that the nature of the basis behind this mitzvah has to do with cruelty, has to do with achzoriyot. The Rambam, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezer, we're going to talk about some of those later on, the context of some messages for Elul and for Rosh Hashanah, but we certainly assume, based on these Rishonim, that it has a lot to do with ensuring that we're working on our own character, improving our character traits, and it's just plain disgusting, mean, despicable to, in effect, take away a mother, her babies, the chicks, the eggs in front of her, and therefore you have to shoo away the mother bird, if you will. Now, it's a fascinating mitzvah for which we're going to get into lots of different aspects of it entirely. And part of what's interesting is that there is a mystical element. So if you jump now to the bottom over here, bottom paragraph in number 3, where he says, Amnam b'tshuvas chavas yoyer siim tam b'shem sefer ha-zohar b'shiluach ha'ein, that the Zohar writes that the nature of sending away the mother is lo'orer yilalos ema eleha al-baneha. This idea of creating, wanting the mother to cry for her children, and in effect getting a benefit from that. Now, Rav Shlomo Eger at the bottom of this source even quotes this concept of this idea that maybe it's a zechut for children, perhaps, in the context of children that a person would have. Bishchar mitzvah zu adam zocha lebanim katzav sefer achinuch tedarish v'etabanim tikach lach. This idea that maybe there's a zechut associated with the mitzvah, that a person who performs its mitzvah will actually have the benefit of receiving children themselves. In and of itself, again, another fascinating, interesting construct of why this might be beneficial and what perhaps is special about this mitzvah. Okay, so now we move on to the next piece. And again, part of what's so amazing about the Sefer is that it structures each section in and of itself as its own, focusing on each individual aspect and impact. And here, we're really only, we'll do some of it, but we're not going to get into everything. So he starts off by telling us that Shiluach HaKan is clearly, Shiluach HaKan, Shiluach HaKan, actually Machlokes is how to pronounce it for another time. It's clearly a mitzvah d'oraita, right? Clearly that's the case. And it's like all other mitzvahs, which are mitzvah d'oraita. However, do you have to go out of your way to try to fulfill this mitzvah? And herein, the Gemara in Chulin is picking up on an issue specifically focused on mitzvahs in general, that being the difference between what we call a mitzvah kiyumit and a mitzvah chiyuvit. There are mitzvahs which are chiyuvim. They're absolute obligations. Tefillin, shofar, lulav, sukkah, you're required to perform those mitzvot. You have to do everything you can in your power to ensure that you're fulfilling those mitzvot. It's an absolute requirement. But then on the other hand, there are mitzvot which are not kiyuvim, obligations. They are what we call a mitzvah kiyumit. What's an example of a mitzvah kiyumit? Shechita. The person doesn't want to have meat. They have no obligation to shecht. Netilat yadayim. Again, leaving aside issues of Shabbat and having meals on Shabbat and the requirement to have bread. If a person doesn't want to have bread, there's no mitzvah to wash the tilat yadayim. Mitzvah makah. Person doesn't build a house or doesn't have a porch that is, without a fence. There's no obligation to put up a fence. These are mitzvot called mitzvot kiyumit, in which you have the ability to fulfill them. So what about Shiluach HaKan? Is this a mitzvah kiyuvit or is it a mitzvah kiyumit? Do you have to search after it, seek it out, do everything in your power to ensure that you can fulfill it, or perhaps that's not the case? So Gemara in Chulin tells us this is in the parak that's talking about Shiluach HaKan. You want to learn about Shiluach HaKan? You learn one parak in Chulin, basically covers most of this. Again, with Rishonim and Achronim, amazing parak of the Gemara. The Gemara tells us, Tanu Rabbanan, Ki Yikaret Kanti Po Levanecha, Ma Tamalim Al Vishnema Shaleh Tishlach Et Ta'im Et Tamim Tikach Lach, Yachlo Yachzer Bahorim, the Gvot, Kadesh Yimtsu Kan. You might think you have to go and look all over the place in order to find this, to make this happen, Tamu Lomar Ki Yikaret. Right? It's only if it happens to you, right? When it confronts you specifically. And the context of this, the many poskim quote this halacha, that you don't have to absolutely go out of your way and drive yourself crazy to try and find this mitzvah and perform it. But yet, the Chidah quotes the Arizal, at the bottom here it says, Alpha God of the Fi Mashmo Deshat, the Katani Yachol Yachzor Baharim, Muchat in a Chayav Lachzor, Lekiyo Mitzvah Zoo. It did we have a reason? Mashmi should certainly shut down the Kayam Mitzvah Zoo. Sounds like from the Arizal, the Chidah quotes, that a person actually should do everything in his power, should work hard, and should try to fulfill this mitzvah because of how special it is. Now, we quoted earlier the Chatam Sofer, and it's not surprising that in context of, again, the Zohar and the ideas and the Zechuyot and the Segulot associated with this mitzvah, why it would be that one should try to do everything possible to fulfill this mitzvah, but yet he says, Omnon, we mentioned this, La'orer Yelalat Ema, to create and promote the fact that she should be crying, Elal Bana, in King Mitzvah, Achar Kanki, La'orer Rachme Ema, Elal Abane. If that's the case, then we really should be running after this mitzvah to try to perform it as best as possible, as much as we can. It's not considered inappropriate or improper to try to look for it and to try to perform it. I love this line, but again, this is me personally, my personality, and where I'm holding hashkafically. The Odei Hechel Tepoli Anigla Ima Nistar Emo Esek Ben Yistarot. This idea that when there's a difference between the nister and the nigla, we don't focus on the nistar. We focus on the nigla. We focus on what's revealed to us. We focus on what we're told. We focus on what we know. That's what we can deal with. Gemara versus Zohar, the Gemara wins out. So fascinating statement by the Chatam Sofer in the context of how this works. Should we not? Yes, no, despite that, the Chavat Yair and his Shailas and Shailas number 8 tells us, again, exactly our question, Shaila Nish'alti im ki yikre kan sipor lifnei ish pasadeh im mechuyav al kopanim l'zkok la l'shlocha te'im or l'shol l'elchu darko. Let's say it does happen that you happen to pass a nest in the field, you know, ki yikre, you happen upon it in the nature of happening upon it, you are able to perform this mitzvah. Do you have to or not? Right? What if you don't want to? Right? What if you're not interested? What if you have no interest whatsoever in taking these children? Is it required? Near is it dicta? Nachon hu mashiyesh datik negmara yachol yachzer baharam demucha techi yikre miat mechuyav mitapel. Sounds like that when it is ki yikra, when it does happen upon you, then you are mechuyav litapel, you are obligated to engage in it. And you are obligated to then perform the mitzvah. Mistabe letam shekata bezoar, shehu kidei shehaof, eim haofot, etc. He continues on with Zohar. He says, safek roi lachush lahachmir b'chol dovar. Better to be machmir in the context of this. Despite that, though, if you look at the bottom over here, the Ran writes, Shiluch mi'ave mitzvah metel talav harei im lorotza dikach abonim potur milishloach. So there's yesha milishloach. The Ran tells us that if you do not want to take the children, the young, the eggs, then you are potur, you're exempt from sending away the mother bird. You do not have to at all. I think I should slow down, right, Rabbi Kelman?
Yeah, a little bit. The sound is still not great, so I think even a little bit more important to speak a little bit slower, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And also, lastly, if you can widen the sources, yeah, to see
is that
the
better?
Yeah, that's for sure is better.
My apologies, everyone. I will speak slower and I will widen the sources. I'm glad I stopped to look.
Yeah, yeah, the sources are widened. And yeah, okay. So just okay. Especially this what's in Hebrew, you know, just to make sure. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go a little slower. Let me review basically what we saw so far. Quick review of what we saw so far. We asked the question of whether or not there is an obligation we'll start from the beginning. We asked the question of the basis for the mitzvah and what the reason is behind the mitzvah. Is there a reason for the mitzvah? Should we look for the reason behind the mitzvah? Number one, is it a mystical reason? We spoke about this idea of sending away the mother. Whether it has to be in a situation where it happens upon you, should you go out and seek this environment? Should you try to find a situation whereby you are placed in an environment in which you can fulfill this mitzvah, or perhaps not? And we spoke about the question of what happens if you confront and you end up in front of a nest. So if you ended up in front of a nest, would you be obligated to fulfill this mitzvah? And as typical when it comes to learning, there are machloksim on all sides of the fence. Every single side has its own opinion as to whether or not yes or no. Jumping to the last piece on this one section, the Chazon Ish writes, and I'll read slower, we'll just do the first two lines here. I'll do a little less Hebrew moving on. Mikan yesh v'hochiyah, din paga v'kan, Ve'eno rotzeh lizchot bebanim eno chayev b'shiluach. Quoting the Ran, the Chazon Ish paskins that if you happen upon a nest and you decide you do not want to take the young, then you're not obligated to send away the bird, but rather you do not have to fulfill the mitzvah. So that's an interesting and important piece just from the question of psak halacha. Okay. So now, the next section that the Tzurba deals with, we're not going to do inside. It's very technical, but I want to show you some of the questions that come up and some of the issues that are discussed. He spends a lot of time on this question of what do you do or what's considered to be in your property. You look at the top again, I'll spend more time on English and less on Hebrew now based on the comments and my apologies again about the sound. But we saw above in Rashi that the mitzvah of shiluach ha'kain does not apply in every situation. Rather, the words I'm reading from this text box here, when you happen, ki yikare, indicate that applies only where the nest isn't considered mizuman, which literally means readily available. This term is used to limit the mitzvah to situations where a nest is situated in places that the mother bird can fly away easily, or are not in one's property. However, nests that are in your possession, that are in your property, where you can catch the bird, right, they would not be included in this. And that's what the Mishnah here in Chulin writes when the Mishnah tells us that Shiluach HaKan Eino Noeg Ela B'She'eino Mizuman. It has to be that it's not in your property, right? If it's in your bayit, it is no good. That would not be considered okay. And the Gemara really spends an incredible amount of time focusing on what is considered your property. Almost a dini mamonot, monetary sugya, of what is and what is not considered to be your property here. The Gemara has it. I've shared with you these sources. Rabbi Kelman is sharing them with everyone so you can look at it slowly in your own time and go through it. It's a fascinating shakla, vitaria, back and forth in the context of the Gemara of what is and what's not your property. The Gemara has a whole discussion around the order of events in terms of the bird and the eggs and when you should chew away the bird and if it gets up off the eggs first or second. Again, an intricate discussion associated with that. But suffice it to say, when it comes to the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, I'll just read some of it, Kan HaMezuman Etzmo, right, that when it comes to this nest that's in your property, right, Kigon Yonim, Shadarchan, Ligadel, in Bnei Adam, Bebetim, right, doves, speaks about geese, speaks about chickens, all of these things that are in your house are putter, right? It has to be that it's not in your house. Talks about it should be your parties. If it's a field, maybe then that's okay. An orchard, that would create an obligation. But again, an intricate discussion around what happens, the eggs, the mother, a kinyan, how you make a kinyan over this, and what you should do to avoid this problem. And in fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein will skip it because, again, very intricate and very detail-oriented in terms of these properties, spends time in his tshuva talking about exactly this and passing through to get to the next section. Okay, now, in his next section, similar idea to what is considered to be a secured courtyard is what he talks about, this idea of a chaser hamishtameret. And what's interesting here, I just want to point out, is that there's this sefer called the Sefer Shaleach Tishalach. Incredible. Today there's a kutras in halacha for everything. Anything you can imagine is a sefer about in halacha. And here he has a whole sefer where he also talks about this idea about what happens if there's a lock on a courtyard. Is that considered a place where you fulfill the mitzvah? Maybe yes, maybe no. He has a whole definition of what is considered to be a courtyard that would be appropriate. And again, we're going to skip this section. We're going to skip this next section as well. I'll just tell you what's contained within it. The next section focuses on how you should grab the mother, whether you should do it with her wings or with her feet. Quotes a Gemara in Chulin associated with how this is done. Quotes all the Rashis associated with it. Again, all the Rishonim. We're going to skip this section. We'll just do this one piece of the Chazon Ish because I think it summarizes it nicely. I'll read it slowly. The Chazon Ish writes, Nira de mitzvah shiluach kidei shetetze mitachat yado hainu mirshuto she'im yachbots letafsa lo yucha vechol zman shiyacha letafsa lo chashiv shiluach ve'ein nefkuta b'shiluach im locha biyad almanat l'shocha o shemigarsho ad shetivach. Meaning that you have to do whatever you can. There's no distinction whether you do it with a hand, with the feet, whether you cause her to run away. And in fact, in the Sefer that we quoted before, Shalach to Shalach, look at the second paragraph here. Kishabala kaima mitzvah al yaday, shemigarsha mehakan. You want to kick out the bird from the nest and you want to fulfill this mitzvah, right? And you want to do it. You don't even have to hit the mother. You can hit next to her. And it will cause her to run away. You can even throw a rock. Even if you want to raise your voice, I have to raise my voice more. Apologies, the sound's not working great. But even if you raise your voice and the mother left, kayim b'zeh mitzvah, you fulfilled the mitzvah accordingly. So that, in effect, gives us a sense of how to do the mitzvah. Now, next section. Do you say a bracha on the mitzvah of shiluach hakan? So here, as you might have guessed, there is a din of machloket. The Aruch HaShulchan tells us, yes, you have to make a bracha. And he quotes from the Ravid, Hey Vishad, the Sof Simon, Kuf Ayin Tet, Dibri Baal Ha'iter, right? The Hilchatat, Sarach Levarach, that you have to make a bracha. But not so fast. Because in the Sheol to Chuvas of the Rashba, question was asked, Im Mevarachim B'Shiluach HaKan, Allah, the Rashba tells us, no, you do not, right? He says, first of all, if you were to make the bracha, it would have to be on the mitzvah aseh, not on the lota aseh, because of the fact that we do not make a bracha on a lota aseh. He actually has a girsa issue there, where at the bottom is a footnote here that changes the word because it seems to not make sense. It's just an interesting nuance that exists here in the context of this bracha. And in the Sefer, Shela Vachua's Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Etlinger writes, 26 here, Yesli Tintam, Another reason not to make a bracha on this mitzvah shiluch hakan to b'shash mevarech over lasiyatam, because the bracha has to be over lasiyatam. Meaning, quick background in mitzvot in general, all bechot and mitzvot, with the exception of three mitzvot, the bracha is supposed to be said over lasiyatam. The bracha is supposed to be said before the mitzvah takes place. There are three exceptions, interesting just to discuss them for another time perhaps: the mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles, the mitzvah of mikvah, and the mitzvah of Netilat Yadayim. Those are all bracha that we say after the action, after the mitzvah. Interesting to think about why that is in each case, but his point is that in the context of Shiluach HaKan, if I were to make a bracha and it would be over Lasiyatim before the action, Yesh Sotek Shema Tivrach Haim Me'alah. There's a problem, and maybe there's a doubt as to whether or not the aim, the mother, would fly away on its own. Without you sending the mother away. And if that would happen, then you'd have a problem on your hands. You wouldn't be able to fulfill the mitzvah specifically in the context of saying a bracha. The Hamid bracha v'atala would be a bracha v'atala. The Rachain, Lo Hizkir HaRajba, Rak Me'ofen HaSheni, Shalok HaTchila, Tivizeh Ein Chashash, Shematifrach, Ava Bezeh HaVemitzvah, Sheba HaYidei Aveir, Lachem B'chol Ofei, Mevarcha Shiluch HaKan. At the end of the day, he said, don't make a bracha, and that's what we paskin as well in the halacha. It's interesting that in the Sefer Sholeh, Tishalach, he says that if you wanted to, you could, and he even quotes at the bottom, without Hashem's name, without Shem Malchut, this Hareini Mulchon Mezumim, L'Shaleach, Ein Sipur Min HaKan, L'Kayin Mitzvot Asrei, Shetzivanu, Bar'i Yitzbarach, Shemo, Batorah, Kedosha, Shenemar, Shaleach, Tishalach, Et Ha'Ein, U'Mitzvot Lotan, Se Shalol, Nikach Ha'Ein, Shenemar, Lotikach Ha'Ein, Al Habanim. And then Baruch Atam Melech Olam Hashem Kishon Mitzvot Zion Shaleach Hakein. Nice language. Person wanted to say it, perhaps to add Kavana as well, something that's going to come up later on. But again, we paskin in general that you do not need to make and say a bracha. Now, what about halachot? Other halachos specifically around sending the mother away. So over here, the Sefer Shaleach to Shalach talks about issues of whether there are multiple eggs, how you deal with that. Then he has a question at the bottom. There are additional issues that he speaks about. He speaks about specifically how you do it, how it should be done, what the instructions are at the bottom. Over here at the top, Sefer quotes a number of just interesting issues that come up, how to hit, what to do, how to make sure it happens. Talks about in Zion, this issue of kavana, having intent. He says, Hinei yesh pa'amim shemiyad, immediately, right, when you go closer to the Khan, when you approach the next, what's going to happen? The mother's going to flee away right away. V'asher chei l'chein roli l'chavim miyad. You have to have kavana immediately. So that whatever you might do that caused the mother to go away, that would be considered included in the mitzvah. He talks about, again, these are fascinating questions, the minimum distance that the mother has to leave and go in order for you to fulfill the mitzvah. What is considered to be enough in the context of this? He talks about this idea of yesh omrim intet shim shalach haim v'lo zacha la'achar mikan babanim. What if you send away the mother, but you don't take the eggs? Do you fulfill this mitzvah of shiluach hakan or not? Yesh omrim, he quotes different possibilities. He talks about the idea of whether or not you're allowed to return the eggs to the nest after you've taken them. Achar shezacha mebeitzim o gafrochim yachal la'achziram lechatchila l'kan v'mekayim ha'mitzvah lechatchila gam im ha'em chozeret aleihem. Maybe you fulfill the mitzvah even lechatchila if you bring them back and the mother returns to them. All interesting questions we never probably would have thought about in the context of this mitzvah. And he concludes the section with types of birds and the fact that there has to be a mother, not a father. He gives us advice here even as to what time of the day the mother sits on the eggs versus when it is that the father sits on the eggs. Also just interesting perspective in the context of that, and talks about specific animals that you can find and where you find them at the bottom over here. And then, again, just to give you a sense of the uniqueness of this sefer, he gives us an incredible summary of all the halachot specifically associated with the reasons for the mitzvah, why it is that we are performing this mitzvah, what we're hoping to accomplish, what we're hoping to do. Tells us each summary of mezumin, how you fulfill the mitzvah, how we send away the mother bird, all the things that we spoke about, saying a bracha, and some of the other halachot are all listed one at a time, all in English, all very clear. That's the section of this. Now, I'm going to stop sharing my screen for a little bit, if that's okay. And what I'd like to do is, let me just switch this for a minute here. Okay.
Very interesting. Your sound just improved a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe it was a screen share.
I don't know why. Yeah, that's not happened in the past. But anyways, go on. Hopefully it'll continue to be better.
I'm sorry. Now can you hear me better, everyone?
I think so.
All right. Maybe it was a screen share. I don't know. Anyway, what I'd like to do now is I'd like to take a step back and I'd like to talk about a few, I think, incredibly important lessons that we learn in the context of this mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan and how it impacts us and what it teaches us as we prepare and get ready for the Yom Ha'Nirayim, Elul, Rosh Hashanah, everything we're in the middle of right now. I want to pull up some different sources. Now, let me start with a fascinating idea that actually I credit Rav Eitan Aviner for sharing with me. Rav Eitan Aviner is an incredible student of Rav David Foreman. And Rav David Foreman, in a different shir, I didn't have the shir, so I'm saying it in the name of Rabbi Aviner, who said in the name of Rabbi Foreman, supposedly put together a beautiful connection between the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan and specifically Yaakov and Esav. Now, the pasuk that he's building it on is when Yaakov and Esav are getting ready to confront each other, and Esav is coming to Yaakov, and Esav is preparing to meet Yaakov. Everyone knows the story. Everyone knows what happened. Yaakov sends presents, and Yaakov davens, and he splits his machaneh, and he's incredibly nervous. And the Torah tells us that Sileni Nami Yad Achim Yad Esav Kiarei Anochi Oto Pein Yavo V'Hikani Aim Al Banim. That language of Aim Al Banim, an incredibly powerful language, says Rabbi Foreman, is the same language, obviously, that we find in the context of the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. He says it's not an accident, but rather he says we know that Esav was an individual who valued Kibbutz Av Aim in an incredible way. And it was the nature of that relationship that Esav had with his father that was very special. And Esav valued relationships between parents and children in general, such that, suggests Rabbi Foreman, maybe one of the reasons that Esav decided not to attack Yaakov was because he valued the relationship that Yaakov had with his children. And he said, this is not the time. This is not where it is. This is not the appropriate area and the appropriate moment specifically to have this fight in the context of Yaakov and Esav. And Esav said, not now. The children are here. The children are watching. And I think it's fascinating because we saw already from the Zohar and we saw it from the Chavat Yair specifically quoted this idea and this concept that there's a relationship between the yelling, the screaming, the crying, the beseeching that the mother bird would do to her children and what we do to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We all know that in many ways, that's what Shofar represents, right? It's the Ema de Sisra, the mother of Sisra, in which we model our Mea Kolot, our 100 Shofar blasts after. It's an incredibly strange concept that we sound the Shofar 100 times, and the reason we sound the Shofar 100 times is because of the fact that Sisra's mother cried 100 times. Who would have thought that that would be the reason and that would be the basis of why we do it? But we do it to demonstrate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're crying. And in fact, the Zohar had said that we want to seek out this mitzvah because we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to know that we're crying. Elo, Nilo, Vivi, the acronym that speaks about the closeness. Tirshu Hashem Bimotso. We have to get close to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. When we can find a Kodesh Baruch Hu, when we can seek out a Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's the special, unique relationship that exists that in many ways we're trying to create. And I think it was an interesting parallel that Rabbi Forman spoke about, and this idea as we approach Elul in particular, to think about the relationship and to think about how we want to do our best to work hard on that relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu, and in fact tell him that we are crying out to you and we want you to help us as well. So that's idea number one. Idea number two to think about is the purpose and the reason behind the mitzvah. We saw the Ramban quoted by the Chatam Sofer, and the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim says something similar. It's actually a little bit of a debate as to whether there are distinctions and differences between the Rambam and the Ramban. I'll read you a quote from the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim in English. It's also prohibited to kill an animal with its young on the same day. It's not my translation. I actually took it from an article that Rabbi Sachs wrote. I knew Rabbi Sachs' English and Rabbi Sachs' translation, so I took his translation. It's also prohibited to kill an animal with its young on the same day in order that people should be restrained and prevented from killing the two together in such a manner that the young is killed in the sight of the mother. For the pain of the animals under such circumstances is very great. There's no difference in this case between the pain of human beings and the pain of other living beings, since the love and tenderness of the mother for her young ones is not produced by reasoning, but by imagination. And this faculty exists not only in man, but also in most living beings. The same reason applies to the law, which enjoins that we should let the mother bird fly away when we take the young. If the Torah shows concern for the emotional well-being of animals and birds, all the more so should this be true of our concern of human beings in general. The Rambam and the Mor Nevuchim in eloquent ways really describes this concept, this idea that the Torah cares incredibly about our development as human beings and developing our nature as caring individuals and as caring people. And the Torah wants us to ensure that we are careful about how we view other people and how we act towards other people. And the Torah recognizes, and the Ibn Ezra also writes about this in a beautiful way on these psukim in the Torah, where he talks about how, in many ways, we don't realize the influences that often happen upon us, and that we need to be incredibly careful, that we have to demonstrate concern for animals. I saw someone mention this idea of Tsar Bali Chayim. Shechita, obviously, is part of the concept in halacha of eating meat, and it's considered very healthy, and it's considered a mitzvah, and it's considered to be the appropriate way to kill an animal. And we do that in the context of how to eat meat. But again, there's an idea that we can't be cruel, because whether we realize it or not, we are defined by our actions, and it is our actions who impact on who we are and who we become. And the message in many ways that we get from the Ramban and from the Rambam is, especially in Elul, especially as we approach Rosh Hashanah, we have to be incredibly careful with who we are, what we do, how we act. We like to think that we are the arbiters of our own influence. We like to think that we get to decide on how we become who we become, but we don't realize how many people are impacting us, who our neighbors are impacts us, what we say impacts us, what we watch, what we listen to, the speech that we use, everything we do, every environment we're in, everywhere we are, that has an impact on us. Just walking on the street, driving in the car, looking at billboards, all of these things have an impact on us. And one of the aspects that I think is a really important takeaway from this mitzvah is this concept, this idea that if cruelty to animals is something that can impact us, and therefore the Torah to some extent may have used that as a reason as to why it is that we shouldn't take the eggs rather, before we send away the mother, that we have to remember and recognize just how careful we have to be about the influences that we allow into our lives. Now, the third aspect that I want to share as a message, as a takeaway message, is really this concept and this idea of the dangers of Tamei HaMitzvot. And in particular, I want to here mention the famous story of Acher, of Elisha ben Avuya. Because many of you know the story, the Gemara in Kedushin talks about it, the Gemara Chulin mentions it as well. Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yaakov said the following, Schar mitzvah b'haya amalaka. There is no reward for mitzvahs in this world. Titanya Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Ein lecha kol mitzvah, mitzvah shektuva, the Torah shematan schar b'tzidah. There's not even a single mitzvah that's written in the Torah in which the reason specifically is given, Shein tchiyah t'meitim t'liyava, right? In which the reward for the mitzvah is right now, but rather, it's an old Abba. V'kibur av'eim k'tiv, l'man yikun yamecha, l'man yitavlach. Of course, we know the mitzvah kibur av'eim, the benefit, the reward given is arichot yamim, v'shiloh hakan k'tiv, l'man yitavlach v'rachta yamim. Same thing as we've seen and we saw for shiloh hakan. Harei, but yet he says the following famous story. Harei sha'amar lo aviv, Allah labira v'haveli gozla. Father tells the son to climb up. V'Allah labira v'shalach ha'ta'im v'nata al-tabbyanim. And he goes up and he performs Shiloh HaKan. V'chazi rato lo aleinu, nafal v'meit. The child falls and dies. Heichan tovat yomav shel zeh. Where is it? Where do we see the reward of long life in that case? Hey, Chanarichos Yamash Shel Zeh. El Lamani Tavlach La'olam Shekulo Tov. Lamani Yerchun Yamech La'olam Shekulo Aruch. Referring to Olam Haba in both cases. And the Gemara goes on to say that it was that incident, that monster, that Acher, Elisha Ben Avuya saw, which caused him to go off the Derech, which caused him to reject Judaism, because he ultimately simply could not fathom a world in which the reasons were given, and then such a phenomenon could occur. And therein you see the dangers associated with having these Tamei HaMitzvot enumerated, elucidated, and explained to us. And, you know, you've heard Shirim and you've learned this before, but as we approach Rosh Yom Kippur, thinking about the concept of Schar V'Onesh, thinking about theodicy, you know, Rosh Hashanah Tefillah, Tshuva Tefillah Tzedakah Ma'avir Torah HaGzeirah, and what that means, and Tzadik V'Ra'lo, Schar V'Onesh, big questions, major machlokim, machlokot in the Rishonim, and in the Achronim, as to what exactly it means, Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba, continuing and adding more time to one's life, all different perspectives, all different opinions. What I would say is that it's an incredibly dangerous concept to think about. And sort of going back to an area where we started, that's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is not to think about reasons in the context of that. Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote in Kol Dodido Feik, I'll quote from the English here, we do not inquire about the hidden ways of Hashem, but rather about the path wherein man shall walk when suffering strikes. Right? And the Rav emphasized that that's not our job, to think about the reasons. Of course, we know the famous story of the Gemara of Rabbi Kiva, where Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't believe the final din, judgment that occurred to Rabbi Kiva. The Kodesh Baruch Hu told him to quiet down, and I can't explain it. And these are things that are beyond us. Our job is to do mitzvot. Shiloh HaKan is an incredible mitzvah if the opportunity arises. And it's a mitzvah to do, and what's going to happen with the reward, not for us to ask, not for us to focus on. And as Rosh Hashanah comes, as Elul comes, that's really what our focus should be in the context of ensuring that we can do our very, very best to perform as many mitzvot as possible. Chabad had it right when they said, and they wanted all men to put on tefillin, all women to light Shabbat candles. The idea was mitzvah, gerut, mitzvah. Do a mitzvah, perform a mitzvah, focus on a mitzvah, and whatever comes of it, comes of it. Good things will come to those who fulfill it. So hopefully I gave a background, cursory. My apologies again about the sound. I've never had that happen to me, and I've been giving tons of shiurim all the time on Zoom for the last 2 years, and I've never had it happen that I've had an issue with the sound. So my really apologies. Happy to give the shiur again, Rabbi Kalman, another time, or retape it if you'd like. But happy to take any questions that you have at this stage.
Thank you. You see, look, all the people who stayed on despite the sound to put in the extra effort. So I want to, Yasher Koach. And if I can, I hope, he won't mind, you, of course, use the Sefer, you know, Surba de Rabbanan, the sponsor of the book, you know, Michael and Marsha Lax, the Lax family, who also are neighbors of ours, of course, in Toronto and good friends, are the, worldwide sponsors of the Surba de Rabbanan, you know, series. So I just want to, say hello and thank you. And, to Michael and to Marsha, and we should have good occasions to join all together. Okay, if anybody's in questions, please to speak up or put them in while you're thinking or writing in. I'll, tomorrow morning, of course, 9:30, my regular Pirkei Avot shiur. Sunday morning, Natty Helfgott, Sefer Yonah at 10 a.m., 11:15, Rabbi Liebtag on Sefer Dvarim. Monday morning, Rebecca Winter will be giving the shiur at 11 o'clock on Tshuva in Tanakh. Then Professor Reinhold, the Dean of Revel, will be at 1 p.m., the Philosophy of Tshuva. Tuesday morning, Rabbi Adler on the re-experiencing the Rosh Hashanah of Rav Soloveitchik. Wednesday morning, Benny Gesundheit continues his series on musings on the Machzor, Malchiot, Zichronot, Shofarot, Haftor of the Week at Night. Thursday morning, what do we have Thursday morning? Gil Pearl continues his wonderful series that he started this morning. This morning, did Arden the Akkad, and next week, Forgiveness, the Yud Gimel Midot. And then at 1 p.m., Rabbi Shvat continues Orot HaTshuva, his series on Orot HaTshuva for Rav Kook. And to next Thursday night, the Parsha Shir will be given by Rabbi Sam Berkowitz, who teaches at SAR in New York. So that's enough to keep us busy learning. We hope to see you, and please invite a friend to come and join us. And, okay, any questions or comments, Vakasha? Rabbi, you have any questions on that? Okay, so keep...
All I can say is what an incredible lineup of shiurim that Torah Moshe has. Just absolutely amazing.
Thank you. But Baruch Hashem, people, you know, it's good. Listen, the people come, give us the strength to, you know, put it all together. So I want to thank all of you. Okay, Rabbi, listen, Shiluach HaKan's a difficult, you know, it's funny. Maybe you want to comment on, I've seen, I don't know, people do it to the exact opposite of Rashi, you know, they go out searching to do the mitzvah, you know, where ki ikare, I mean, to say, you know, how Nechama Leibowitz, I remember, told us, the only mitzvah Torah you have to run after, the most important, is bakesh shalom v'radfehu. You know, other mitzvah, ki ikare, ki matzeh, if you happen to find a lost object, you give it back. If you don't, you don't. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, if you happen to have a lot of money, you give tzedakah. You don't have to make a lot of money to give tzedakah. That's an interesting tshuva, yes. But here on Shiluach HaKan, yet you have this notion, people running out to try to do the mitzvah. So,
the only comment I'll make is I think that people believe that there's a special school associated with it. I'm not such a big, you know, schooler person. I think there's a school associated with every mitzvah. Any mitzvah you do is a schooler. So I think that people want to try to fulfill mitzvahs that are challenging as well. And this is one of those such mitzvahs, challenging to fulfill. That's what drives it, I guess.
I don't know anybody who's ever done the mitzvah, actually. I don't maybe someone here. Maybe I know them. I just don't know they've done the mitzvah. But I'm not aware of anybody who's ever told me they did the mitzvah. So that's interesting. Okay. Anyways. Okay. All right. Wish everybody Laila Tov, and hope to see you soon, and a Shabbat Shalom, and Rabbi Grauer, hopefully we'll see you in Shul on Shabbat. Now that we're both in town on the same weekend, spending, so, Vakasha. Okay. Be well, everybody. Laila Tov.